This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today on Mariners Memories, we visit with former Mariners closer Mike Schuller. Schuller pitched for the Mariners from 1988 to 1992, racking up nearly 100 saves in his Mariners career.
Schuller, the sign from Dave Valley, he goes to the stretch. Here comes the 1-2 on the way to Dwyer now with two outs, and this time the breaking ball got him swinging and it's over. And Mike Schuller has set a new American League record in his 110th appearance. He has his 50th career save and his second here in 1990.
He ended his six-year big league career in 1993 with the Texas Rangers. And one of the most amazing aspects of Schuller's career was how he got to the major leagues.
I played my freshman year in high school, my junior year in high school. I got cut my senior year. I tried out at Fullerton College 2 years in a row. I got cut. Went to Cypress and made the team. Cypress wasn't very good. And then I went to Golden West, had a great year, and then Cal State Fullerton, and then signed. But here I was. I mean, I was my last gasp. I was not going to play baseball after I got cut in high school and got cut in college 3 years in a row. And I was like, just was persistent because I loved to play. Actually, I played with like a semi-pro team before I went to Cypress, and this guy goes, yeah, I'm playing at Cypress. I'm like, Cypress, man, are they any good? And he goes, no. He goes, but you could probably play there. So I did, and then it kind of snowballed from there. But it was kind of like, here I was playing in a almost a beer league. And it kind of went from there. So I look back and go, somebody was watching over me because it's hard to believe that I made it to the big leagues. Actually, I ran into the baseball coach who cut me. I ran into him while I was coaching at San Clemente High School because he's a pro scout for the Angels. And I remember talking to him. I was like, I haven't talked to this guy since he cut me. And I remember him, and I had such bitterness to him because I'm like, how could you cut me? And I talked to him, and he goes, I cannot believe that I cut you. And I'm like, I go, well, you did. You couldn't have saw this. And he goes, I'm so glad and happy for you. He goes, I'm glad that it worked out. And I'm like, me too. And I go, you know what? And I shook his hand. I'm like, thanks for talking. I go, because I've had such bad feelings about you for so many years that were wrong. There shouldn't have been. It was just, it was kind of funny to see that. So that kind of cleansed my soul for that. So, and saw it as a blessing. What if I made that team and nothing happened? But it was just, I'll never take for granted what happened. It was as being awesome.
One of the things looking back on your career that I find remarkable is I look at you getting the call in 1988 to the Mariners, and here you are, your second big league game. You're in a save situation in a one-run ball game with a runner aboard against the Twins. I mean, you were a closer from the second you stepped on the field, which is remarkable.
Jim Snyder was the manager, and he's like, don't worry, Mike. We're going to ease you in. You've been a closer. You're just – because I just went to closer from went to Venezuela, so I hadn't been doing it. It wasn't like I was a trained closer like they are nowadays. So I remember he's like, yeah, we brought Mike Jackson. He's going to fill in. You're just going to kind of back him up, set him up. And I was like, okay. Next thing I know, I'm in there facing Tommy Herr. And I was like, I'm standing on the mound going, Tommy Herr, didn't I just see this guy on TV win the World Series? I'm like, okay, this is my guy. I gotta get him out. So I got a ground ball to Harold. Alvin committed, so I had to run over there. And, of course, Harold throws one right at my ankles. And I was like, so I'm running over there, and I'm like, just give me a good feed. And I was able to dig down and get it and get the save. And kind of from there went into the closer role by fire. So it's kind of, I don't remember a lot of saves, but that one I distinctly remember. So it was kind of interesting. And, you know, Harold Reynolds, he's a great guy. He's like, dude, I'm sorry, man. I could have given you a better feed on your first save.
Oh, you went through the system quickly, but you were a starter your first 3 years.
Yeah.
Why would they change from starter to bullpen?
Because I would bounce back pretty well from my starts. And I did pretty well in single A Wausau, and then I was having a really good year in Chattanooga. And Bill Haywood was the player, minor league player development. And I remember I was about three quarters of the way through the system in Chattanooga, and he calls me in, met with him and Sal Rendy and Dan Worthen, who was the pitching coach. And they said, you know, Mike, we think your best, your future is in the Mariners organization is to be a reliever. And back then, you know, this is 87. Back then, starters were starters, you know, and the relievers were whoever was up next, pretty much. There wasn't the whole lefty-righty setup, long man. It was like whoever's available and whoever's at the end of the game is pretty much closing it out. And my first thought was, man, that's – I don't know about this. I don't know. I felt like I was having a really good year, and I'm like – there, it felt like a demotion. And then I think Bill Haywood, he was kind of a bruff guy. He was kind of like, this is the way. He steps in and he goes, Mike, I'm going to tell you one thing. We feel this is your quickest way to get to the major leagues. And as soon as I heard major leagues, I went, I'm in. Okay. Because I went from, oh, geez, here I am. I'm they're going to send me to the bullpen. You know, they don't think I blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as he said that, I was like, I'm in. So you're going to start your next start, and then we're going to end the season with you in the bullpen. I'm like, okay. The next start, I threw a three-hit shutout, struck out 11, 12 guys against the Atlanta Braves organization with, like, Jeff Blauser and Dave Justice and all those guys. And I was like, okay, now that's my last start. And then they kind of met, well, we'll let you finish out the season. And I was like, okay. So I was kind of in flux. I was like, what am I going from here? And then they sent me down to instructional league. They said, we're going to send you to Venezuela, Caracas, Venezuela, to become a closer. It was really just kind of amazing. I went from here. This guy was in college. And then 2 years later, I'm already going down to Venezuela. And when I got down there, I realized this isn't double A anymore. You know, you got Andres Galarraga, Tony Armas, Ozzie Guillen, all these, you got big leaguers playing, and they're like, you know, by the way, you're going to fit into the closer role. Okay. But I had a pretty successful year. It worked out really well. And then, you know, that's how I kind of slipped into that. It's kind of just a whirlwind of activity. It's like, you're going here, you're going there, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, now we're going to send you to big league camp. And you're going to have a chance for the relief role with the Mariners. And I'm sitting there going, okay. It's like the path was just kept narrowing and narrowing to the big leagues. And I'm like, just going along with the flow. You know, I realized if I get people out, it gets, the better I do, the more people I get out, the more chance I have to get to the big leagues.
And you make it, and you develop into really one of the first closers in Mariners history. As you kind of alluded to the role, I mean, it was a developing role at the time. There had been closers, obviously, but it's not like it is now. Is it a role that once you got going that you really embraced and felt it was yours?
Yeah, I loved it. I just, as a starter, you're geared up every 5 days. And I mean, I love to pitch. I mean, I pitched in Little League. I pitched in college. Wherever I was, I played and I pitched. I loved to pitch. And I remember telling Sal Rendy, I think, when I was in Double A, and I was like, I'd go throw a bullpen and my arm felt great. And I'd be like, if you need an inning, give me an inning instead of throwing a bullpen. And he's like, oh, no, dude, that's not possible. But I was like, I just wanted to pitch. And it didn't bother me. My arm was fine. And I bounced back. And I think also was the competition. Being on the field and pitching was definitely a place I loved to be.
Well, you put together some big seasons. I mean, 30 plus save seasons as a closer. You look at the rankings in terms of saves, you know, top five, top seven in a couple of years. I mean, what were those years like when you were closing out those big numbers in terms of saves?
I never was a big stat into stats and ERA and stuff like that and saves. And I looked back and, you know, maybe if I was a little more aware of it, I would have been, I think being naive about all that helped me. Because seeing the stats and worrying about your stats and this and that, I think that's what helped me was, you know what? Okay, I give up two runs. You know, how does it affect my ERA? And I'm like, how did it affect the team? If I blew a save, I was like, okay, I gave up a run. Who gives a, you know, I don't care. The fact that the team lost. But I don't know. I think that was one of the mentalities that Jim Lefevre always used to talk about. You go, you got a closer mentality. And I thought, what's a closer mentality? And I kind of thought about it a little bit more. And it's like, you want to be out there the next every day, except and you got can't worry about the last day. I've never got to the point where I need to get a save. I'm at 29 saves. I need 30 saves. I've got whatever. I never thought about that way. I think that's what I just lived in the moment when the next time I was going to pitch and when I was going to get a save. So I think that kind of helped me throughout the years. And that's kind of what I thought. That's how I thought about the role.
Yeah. And you mentioned Jim Lefevre and you mentioned the team. You were part of the team that broke through, the team that finished over 500 for the first time. And for fans that were here, they remember that year and what a big deal that was. What do you remember about that season?
Here is the 0-2 pitch on the way, swinging a one hopper back to the mound. Swift has it, throws to first, and it's 7 minutes after 10 down here in Texas. The M's get a 15-year-old Simeon off their back. A gorilla, a monkey, it is gone. They have assured themselves that they are a 500 ball club. They are now 81-78 and flying home a mighty happy group, I guarantee you. My, oh my, it's finally over.
It's funny you say that because I was just thinking about that because I was thinking about I haven't talked to anybody in baseball or anything like that for years. And I was like, I wonder if that will come up. And I remember that was a big deal. And at first, we all thought as we were playing, going 81, get to 81 wins, you're guaranteed a winning season or a break-even season. And I remember sitting there going, wow, that's a pretty lame goal to set. But then I realized how everybody was excited about it. The fans were excited about it. And I came to appreciate it more after the fact, going, you know what, that's the first step towards a winning team, because you got to do that at one point. And I understood after the fact, I understood, yeah, it was a big deal. And that was something special to be a part of.
Have you kept anything from your playing days?
I've got most of my save balls, most of my significant save, first save and all that stuff, and some jerseys and stuff. I have a couple pictures with Griffey and my sons. And they're like, I have a picture of Griffey holding my youngest son. Other than that, I don't have a lot of memorabilia. And that's one thing I wish I would have done better was save more stuff. At the time you're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I also have a couple of Nolan Ryan signed baseballs, which are definitely the prize of my collection. Cause growing up, I was an Angel fan, grew up in Anaheim, California, and watching Nolan Ryan pitch. He was one of my I wouldn't say heroes, but he was one of the guys I looked up to and really wanted to be like.
Did you go talk to him and get him signed?
No, what they would do is, I remember when they would come into town, they'd be like, if you want anything signed by Nolan Ryan, you got to send it over the first day. If he's not pitching, the first day he's not pitching, he'll spend whatever it is. So I had had a couple of baseballs. He signed them to my first son, MJ, and then my second son, Clint. He signed those. So I have those. And the funny part about that is 93, my last year in the big leagues, I played in Texas and I played with him. And my youngest son, Brett, he was born that year. I didn't get one signed by him. And I'm like, I played with him and I never got one signed by him. So I thought it was easier to get a ball, something signed by Nolan Ryan when you're on the other team and you just had the clubhouse guys send it over. But I didn't want to walk over there and say, hey, can you sign this? He was a good guy, but he just, you know, I wasn't like that. But I do remember I was taking a weird, even though I grew up in Anaheim, I was, like we say, at the Doubletree, and I was taking a cab to Anaheim Stadium. And I was looking around because I grew up right in that neighborhood, and I'm looking around, taking it all in for the first time. I've been there tons of times, but I'm sitting there going, thinking about Nolan Ryan. I'm like, wow, I'm actually going to be playing in a game with Nolan Ryan in the stadium I grew up watching him. And I was like, it was just after all I'd been through, I'm like, wow, this is surreal. And it was pretty awesome. And I remember talking to him and I said, because everybody called him Noli. I said, Noli, man, I remember coming here watching you when I was a kid. And he thought I was busting his chops because, you know, oh yeah, here you are. You're a kid and you're playing, you know, how old am I? And I'm like, yeah. And I was trying to give him the ultimate respect and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, oh, please don't tell me you're one of those snot-nosed little brats that would yell at me from the stands. And I'm like, I was thinking to myself, no, I would never yell at you, man. You were my favorite. But then he was just giving me a hard time. But it was kind of funny. I was like, wow, that hit me. And it was kind of interesting how I remember how those feelings come back. I just remember seeing him sitting in that locker room. And, man, it just like I would never want to watch him on the mound as I was hitting. Because talk about competitors. He was the ultimate competitor. And yeah. It was great to be to play, actually pitching a game in a setup role. I came in right after him in Texas. And I was like, oh my God, he left a couple runners on base and I'm going, jeez, don't give up his runs. Don't give up his runs. And I was like, it's kind of funny. Cause I gave up a long fly ball to left center. And for some reason in Texas, usually there's weird, sometimes the ball just flies out and other times it gets knocked down and it got knocked down the old stadium. And I was like, okay, good. I was relieved. I got out of the inning. I'm like, I did not want to walk into that dugout and see him after giving up two of his runs, but it was pretty fun.
Oh man, that's so great. Hey, what do you remember about when you came into games, school's out? Do you remember the music playing every time you came in?
You know what? I remembered it after somebody pointed it out to me, because that was kind of the start of the walk up music. And I remember, because when I would go into the game, I would just be going to the game and just be focused on what I'm doing. I'm not worried about all the peripheral stuff. And I remember sitting in the bullpen. And I think it was Keith Comstock or somebody like that. And they're like, well, what do you think about the song? I'm like, what song? And they're going, the song they play, School's Out for Summer by Alice Cooper. And I'm like, what? It was kind of, I'm like, they play that? And they're like, yeah, of course they do. You know, that's your walkout. And I'm like, okay. So the next time I went in, I was like, okay, I was warming up and I made myself look. And then they had some stuff on the big screen with the School's Out and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I refocused, but it was kind of like, I thought about it and I was like, I'd never even really worried about it. You know, now everybody, we talk about it. The funny thing is I tell the kids, cause I'm been a PE teacher for the last 18 years in Southern California. And we'll play, like we'll go in the fitness lab and they don't want to listen to my music. They want to listen to whatever the music they listen to. So I'll play School's Out and they're like, what are you playing now? And I'm like, that was my walkout song. And they're like, what's a walkout song? It just cracks them up because they're like, and then the kids who actually know sports and play baseball or whatever, and they're like, that's your walkout. That, wow, you had one of those? I'm like, yeah. So it's kind of funny.
I have to talk to you about an extra inning game against the Red Sox where you ended up batting in the ball game. So you have not only you have a ton of saves to your credit, years in the major leagues. You have a major league plate appearance to your credit, too.
Right.
Before that, when's the last time you had batted, and what was that experience like?
I batted in my freshman year of college at Cypress College. and I had an at bat, and the coach thought, because I wasn't pitching very well, and the coach thought, I took batting practice with everybody, with the guys, and I hit a couple home runs, and I was like, so he put me in a game, and, you know, I didn't do very well, and so that was the last time, and then I get up there, and the interesting part about, there's a lot of interesting things about that at bat, was I just picked, I had two bases loaded innings where that I got out of, and I thought it was two, and I think I was two, after my second inning, 2 2/3, so I'm walking off, I'm like, oh man, I'm done, all right. So the fever calls me over, Schools, come here. I'm like, what? Okay, great. He's gonna tell me you're done, we're getting him in. He goes, okay, so here's what's gonna happen. You're gonna get in at bat. He goes, I want you to take until you get a strike. You don't even swing that, you know what, bat until you get a strike on you or two strikes on you, because you just want to open and walk. And I'm like, what? Okay, here you go. So I'm walking around. I'm like, I need a bat. I asked Henry Cotto. Henry, because I know Henry Cotto, he used light bats. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Henry, you got a bat? Can I borrow one of your bats? He goes, no, I'm not going to let you break one of my bats. I'm like, oh, great. Okay. I couldn't find a bat. So finally somebody hands me a Buhner's bat. I'm like, okay, fine. The first pitch, I'd never seen a pitch that was 94 miles an hour. And after that first pitch, I was like, yeah, I'm done. So I ended up getting a jam shot. I made contact, jam shot to second base. They throw me out. And I'm sitting there going, man, I thought I was on that ball. It's a 34.5, 34-ounce bat. That's probably why it didn't break. If it was a lighter bat and with a smaller handle, it probably would have broke. So I was like, okay. So I'm running. I'm out of there. I'm like, man, I'm glad I'm a pitcher.
You know, it's interesting in the era that you played, because you kind of bridged the, as I think about it, kind of the Alvin Davis, Harold Reynolds era to what became the Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez, Jay Buhner era. And you were kind of right in the middle. You went from one to the other. Let's talk about the Alvin Davis era a little bit. What do you remember about playing with AD, one of the best Mariners in history?
He was, to me, was an incredible athlete. I mean, a great baseball player, but as a guy, as a man, as a mentor, as a person, he was unsurpassed. You know, he didn't look at you as a rookie or look at me or anybody. He looked at you as a person, and he was a guy who led by example in both aspects, both on the field and off the field. And he was a great teammate to play with, but he was also a great friend to be around and to lead. And he embraced that role, which was, you know, some guys try to enforce themselves and their beliefs and stuff. And he wasn't like that at all. He was just, hey, you're a grown man. You got a job to do. This is your job. Make sure you realize that and conduct yourself in a professional manner and, you know, do the best you come to the field prepared. And I think that's what I remember most about him, was his, not only a person off the field, but a great influence on the field too. I mean, yeah. I had many conversations with him after some rough games. He was the first guy really that I would always talk to. If I had a great game, it was, you know, you don't need to uplift anybody, but if you had a bad game, you know, kind of, it's like the oil, you know, everybody separates, but he would be the first guy there to talk to you and say, hey man, go get them next time. You're there. And same with Harold Reynolds. They were both the same, but Alvin really stood out. So I really respected him. And he's the one guy I wish I could, you know, wish I could talk to. Everybody goes, who would you like to talk? Who do you talk to? I'm like, I don't talk to a lot of people, but he was, I think of him, and it'd be nice to see him and see how things are going.
Yeah. Wonderful guy. In 88, you're seventh in rookie of the year. You had a tremendous rookie season, and then 89 rolls around and this 19-year-old is on the club to start the season. What are your memories of early Ken Griffey Jr.?
I remember him in instructional league the year before that. Maybe a couple years. I think I went to instructional league couple of years together. That's the league that you all know after they send the prospects down to get extra work in Arizona at the end of the season. And I remember he was a great guy. I remember reading, I'm like, Ken Griffey Jr., number one pick. He's going to come in, and how's he going to be? Is he going to be above it all? Is he going to be the guy who doesn't think that he needs to be around everybody, you know, kind of just that superstar mentality? But he definitely wasn't. He was a good guy. He was fun to be around. And I think that's why they call him the kid, because he was like a kid. I mean, he was out there no matter what. He'd be out there in the instructional league at 9 o'clock in the morning, and everybody's going, I don't know. He's out there running around just loving baseball. And his mentality was infectious. It was like, man, here you got this kid. He's running around. He's bouncing off the walls. And I remember somebody asking about him in spring training. Does he have a chance to make the team? And I'm like, I think it was 89. I'm like, I don't know. I go, if they take it on his production, he has a good chance. And that spring, he tore it up. I mean, he was raking the ball. He was just mashed. He was just playing great defense. You know, he'd run down balls. There's many balls. I'm sitting there, and there's expansive Arizona baseball fields. You give up one in the gap, and I'm like, oh, no, what base do I back up? And then you see him running, and it's like that little – and I'm like, wow, this kid's going to be special. But the thing about him looking to jump to his career, which I followed his career, obviously, I think about him, and if he didn't have a couple of those injury years in Cincinnati, the things he could have done, his career is great. I mean, great career, but imagine the numbers he could have put up, because he loved about being out there and playing.
Absolutely. No doubt. So for fans that didn't get a chance to watch you pitch, how would you describe yourself to a fan that never got to see you?
It's tough to equate it to these days, to the current days and how it's been, because now they judge everybody on how hard you throw, which is amazing. These guys, what they're doing with these numbers is amazing. But I would have to say, I guess I'd describe myself more as a power control pitcher. I didn't throw extremely hard, but I threw hard enough for my fastball to be all right. But the ball moved a lot. But the main thing was my fastball slider, one went one way, one went the other way. And I just threw strikes. And I tell the young kids, I've coached high school baseball for 15 years, and I try to tell the kids, you got to throw strikes. So that's why I would say maybe a control power pitcher kind of, and competitive. I mean, that's another thing I tell the kids, you can't teach, is you got to want to get somebody out. You got to want to not get beat. And I just don't know how to explain that.
Yeah.
I just love to compete, you know, no matter what it was, if it was a 10 run game or a one run game, I wanted to get that guy out. I feel like I was giving it my all on every at bat and every inning.
When you think about your time in Seattle, do you have a couple of favorite moments that you think back on?
Obviously my first save was definitely the highlight. It's tough to say so many moments, but after my first injury, when I really hurt my shoulder, that first inning back meant something, you know, being out on the field and people cheering and, you know, just welcoming me back to the field. That was very special too. It felt, I don't know if a lot of people can't remember or never experienced the Kingdome, but no matter how big it was, it felt like you were right there, because everybody stood out, it seemed like. And it's like, if you're walking off, you could make eye contact with people talking to you. So, and the positive encouragement was, I remember, but not saying that there wasn't any unpositive encouragement, discouragement, but it goes with the game. I can't really say a lot of different, you know, things. I can remember the worst one. I don't know if you want to hear that one, but is the Dave Winfield Grand Slam, I think in 1991, maybe? I'm not exactly sure. I remember it was opening day, and I gave up a Grand Slam to Dave Winfield. And I was like, I had a spring training. I was coming back from my injury, had a spring training. I didn't give up a run, gave up hardly any hits, and felt I'm back when I go out there and hang a slider to Dave Winfield and he hits a grand slam. I remember, wow, okay, it's not spring training anymore. But it's all my memories are, I have fond memories, but I think the general memory is just being around the players and stuff. That's what I remember most. Being in the locker room, having my kids, my oldest son, MJ, who's now 32, coming in the locker room after the game with Brian Holman's son, Scott, and Jay Buhner. Dave Cochran, I remember. Dave Cochran was there. He was a childhood friend of mine. We played baseball in Little League together. And really? We ended up being in the big leagues together. He lived right down the street from me. So it was kind of funny because I'm sitting there going, Dave, what's he doing? Why did we sign him? And I was giving him a hard time. I'm like, why did we sign this guy? So, but yeah, he was there and we got along and their kids were about the same age. And, you know, just that aspect was very memorable.
Who was the toughest hitter you faced?
As many times as I've been asked that, it's the same guy for years and years, is Wally Joyner.
Hmm.
Remember Wally Joyner, World, Anaheim Stadium?
First baseman, yeah.
He, for some reason, I just couldn't get him out. When I played golf, my agent represented both of us. I remember golfing with him, and I'm like, I would talk to him. I'm like, he would go, dude, you're so nasty. You know, you got that slider, you got the sinker, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, really? You're like 9 for 10 off me. He goes, yeah, but you got nasty stuff. He goes, but I've just been fortunate. And I'm like, okay. So but he was pretty tough. And you would think that I got lefties out. I think I got lefties out pretty well, but he just, I don't know. He seemed like he was a guy who was on it. Kirby Puckett also was a tough guy. Mm-hmm. We always joked around about him was, if you're a control pitcher, if you throw strikes, you can get Kirby Puckett out, because if you miss, he's a bad, bad ball hitter. So when we didn't figure that out, and here I am, I'm sitting there trying to get him to chase balls out of the zone, up and in and stuff. That was my game. And I'm like, okay, I'm throwing a ball at his eyes, in off his hands, and he's drilling it down the right field line, throw a slider outside outer half about off your ankles. And he's hooking that down the line. And I'm like, wow. Okay. When I go to a situation, I'm going to throw him a strike. I got up. I remember it was in Minneapolis. And I was like, I threw a strike, BP fastball, boom, right down the middle. And he took it. And I'm like, wow, he was just sitting there. It was almost like he was geared up for something nasty. So of course I'm like, okay, I get two strikes on him. I'm like, okay, fine. So then I'm going to go, I'm just going to bust one in on him, see how he does it. And then he bleeds one over the first baseman's head. And I'm like, okay, stick with the program. But for those two guys, I mean, and those guys were great hitters. So yeah. I needed the big swingers to get those guys out.
Yeah, because these things always work the other way too. So who are the great hitters that you really did well against? Who do you remember like, yeah, I have your number?
I would have to say probably the best is Mark McGuire. Mm. And if we were meant for each other, if he was a hitter for me, you know, you could bust him in with a fastball and throw sliders away. And he just, for some reason, he didn't see the ball well. And I did pretty well against him. But then, you know, he was hitting all those home runs. And I'm like going, I don't know. I like seeing him come up because it went well for me. You know what I mean? It was a good scouting thing for me. You know, fastballs in, sliders away. Cecil Fielder was the same guy. I did pretty well against the big home run hitter. That's it right there. I need these guys who really, if you pitch them backwards, you throw them sliders early, fastballs away, you can get them out. The good contact hitters, those are the tough guys because they got the good eyes and, you know, they don't hit until you hang one. And I remember Sparky Anderson used to drive me crazy because whenever I'd get in there, he'd put Gary Pettis up there. Really? You got Alan Trammell, you got Cecil Fielder, you got all these. And then, I mean, actually, he pitch hit for somebody big one time, and I'm like, okay. I ended up walking him because he just sitting there, and I'm like, I just couldn't get him out. And then next, he'd steal second. He did it like three times in a row with me. And I remember talking to Gary because he lived in Southern California. He's like, I always knew schools when you came in, I was getting in a bat. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that's great. Oh, man. Mike, this has been so much fun. I kept you way longer than I promised, but
that's fine.
All the time. Thank you very much.
I always like to get a chance to talk about stuff. I don't really a lot when I'm around my friends, they've all heard the story. So it's kind of like, okay, whatever. But it's good to talk to somebody who knows the history of the Mariners and all that stuff. So it's fun for me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.